Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's built around your body. The Natural Cycles app pinpoints your fertile days by tracking shifts in your temperature, so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. It's easy to use. Simply take your temperature in the morning with our free Bluetooth thermometer included with our annual plan, or sync with your Oura Ring or Apple Watch. The app analyzes your data and tells you daily whether it's a fertile or non-fertile day. Natural Cycles is 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. But beyond effective birth control, the app helps you understand your body and cycle better than ever. And unlike some period tracking apps, Natural Cycles provides an advanced data protection program to keep your information private and secure. Ready to go hormone-free? Sign up for the Natural Cycles annual plan and get a free Bluetooth thermometer, plus 15% off your subscription with the code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com.
Rahimi and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on 670 The Score.
You don't get a statue by yourself. Every one of my teammates and coaches stands right there with me. After all, none of this happens if a disgruntled Larry Boa doesn't want out of Philadelphia. Thanks, Larry, for always being disgruntled. And thanks for making me chase all those pop-ups. And that was all because of the sun and the wind, like you guys talked about, how tough it is here at Wrigley. But, Bo, thanks for showing me the ropes.
There's Ryan Sandberg at the unveiling of his statue outside of Wrigley Field. It is Rahimi and Harris. Mark Grody in for the entire 1 o'clock hour. Rami Makhlouf in for Layla Rahimi today. And joining us now on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today. The aforementioned by Ryan Sandberg there in that speech, Larry Boa. Larry, did he ever thank you in person for being disgruntled and forcing your way out of Philadelphia, which ultimately brought Ryan Sandberg to Chicago?
Yeah, he always reminded me of that. He was very happy there in Chicago. And this is a tough day, man, for baseball world, for his family. My prayers go out to Margaret and all the children, the grandchildren. Like I said, I saw Rhino. He came to visit the Phillies in spring training towards the end of February, I believe it was, and he looked great. Talked to him a few times. In fact, one day I called him. He was golfing, you know, and I thought, man, this thing might be headed in the right direction. Excuse me. And, you know, it's like I said, it's a tough day. And not only was he a Hall of Fame player, he was a Hall of Fame person.
Larry, we know this is a tough day for so many, whether it's the fans here in Chicago, baseball in general, his peers, everyone's spoken so highly of him for us who have covered him. And you summed it up with the Hall of Fame player, not just that, but also a Hall of Fame person. What do you want people to remember about Ryan Sandberg?
First of all, how humble he was. Usually people with that superstar label, you know, a lot of them have their own personality. They go their own way. This guy was available to everybody, whether he went 4-for-4 or 0-for-4. Children, he'd sign autographs, talk to fans. Unless you got a chance to really know Rhino, people thought he was like shy and everything. Once you got to know him and he let you in his circle, he was a tremendous teammate. He was great in the clubhouse. There isn't anything he couldn't do on the baseball field. Whatever, you need a stolen base, he'd do that. You need a home run, he'd do that. You need to make a play. Always prepared. I remember we got traded, and I called him and I said, hey, when are you going to spring training? And he said, well, the due date for us to be there is the 15th of February. I said, no, we're going February 1st. We're going to work on double plays. He goes, you got it. And from that day on, his work ethic was second to none. In fact, when we went on the road or even at Wrigley, when the tarp was on, he felt like he wasn't ready to play. So we had to play pepper, play catch. We found a dry spot. He really felt like if he didn't do his pregame stuff, he cheated the game. That's how dedicated he was to this sport. And I think the biggest thing about him is that, like I said, when you do the things that he did on the baseball field, you know, sometimes you can get a little cocky and dig yourself. Reiner was never like that. He was a team player. All he cared about was winning baseball games. He could care less about all the other stuff. And he prepared like every game was a World Series. And he's going to be really, really, really missed, not just in Chicago. People know Ryan Sandberg all over the United States. This guy was a tremendous athlete, tremendous person. And like I said, this is one of my most difficult days. I knew things weren't going well. And in my opinion, this is just my opinion, he is so humble. I really believe, because the last time I made checks on him, they said that it could be any day. And I think Reiner waited till the Hall of Fame was over. I really do. He didn't want to take any of all the accolades of the guys going in a couple days ago. And that's what kind of person he was.
Huh.
That's just my feeling, because I feel I was really, really close to this guy. And like I said, I miss him already. I miss him. I do know one thing. The man upstairs has an unbelievable player up there. I know that.
Larry, no doubt about it. And I would just like to, I am sorry for your loss, man. And look, I was 12 during the 84 Cubs, so you can imagine how much you and Rhino and Leon Durham and Ron Say and Bob Dernier and Sarge Matthews and Keith Moreland and Jody Davis, how much you guys all meant to me watching those games. So it is, I don't know how to put it, but it's an honor to be able to hear from you on this day and to hear you talking about Ryan Sandberg this way.
Well, we had a ball. We had a lot of fun. We played hard. The only thing that I have nothing bad to say about Rhino, because except one thing, every time we got into a cab, Rhino would go in the back seat. He never picked up a cab fare, and I told him, I said, you know what, once you get that big, big contract, you're going to have to get up here in the front seat and whip out that wall, and he would crack up. He had that contagious laugh that, I mean, he walked through the clubhouse and say something, and then he'd see me and Bull or Keith or Sarge or Bobby talking. He'd come over and he'd instigate something. He'd walk away and look over his shoulder and start cracking up. I mean, this guy, he was a tremendous individual. I can't say enough about what kind of special person he was. I know he was a great player, but he was just a special person.
And he eventually did get that big contract. I remember when he signed that deal, and it was $30 million, and people were like, is any player or pro athlete worth this much money? And look where we are now, Larry. But did he ever pick up a cab fare after that? And did he change at all as a person after achieving that type of wealth?
No, he never changed as far as the money was concerned. But he did pick up some cabs, I will say that. He played the game like he was making the minimum. You never heard him brag about the gold gloves, the silver sluggers, the MVP. He just wasn't that kind of guy. He always had words of encouragement, whether a guy like me was 0 for 10 or Say was 0 for 12, whatever. Hey, hang in there, keep going. And I remember his very first game at Wrigley. I mean, he started off terrible. He had a long 0 for, and everyone kept saying, hang in there, hang. He says, you hang in there. Right then, I knew right then the mental toughness was there, because when you first come up as a rookie and you start off the way he did and you didn't cave in, I knew. I said, this guy's going to be something special. Now, I'll be honest with you. Did I think he was going to be a Hall of Famer when he first came up? No, but I saw him evolve into – he was like a line drive hitter like myself.
Yeah.
But he learned how to hit home runs, and I'll tell you what, the sky was the limit for him. He could – there isn't nothing he couldn't do on the baseball field.
Larry Boa joining us here on Rahimi and Harris with Rami Makhlouf and Mark Grody also in here in studio. And Larry, I want to ask you, because we were just speculating, because you kind of mentioned it, that, you know, what we saw as fans isn't what you guys saw once Ryan Sandberg got to know you and had like a softer, funnier side. What do you think it was that propelled him from that quieter version of himself to this guy that we've got countless stories from fans and their interactions with him after his playing days?
I think the biggest thing with Rhino when he first came up, this is just me, I mean, just being close to him, I think he wanted to prove to everybody that, hey, I can play up here, but it wasn't a bravado type thing. It was, I'm going to show people that I can be one of the best to ever put the uniform on. And what amazed me about him is when you first get called up and you play one position, that's one thing. When he first got called up, we had him in center field. We had him at second base. We had him at third base. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at this rookie, and I'm going, this guy is unbelievable. I think he finally realized that, hey, I was pretty good, but you'd never hear it from his mouth, believe me. He thought he was just one of the guys, and he was, except when you look at his stats, and then he took it to another level. But I just think that the fact that he had so much confidence as he grew as a player on the field, that he understood that he had to set examples for young guys coming up. I mean, he was around guys that played before. All those guys that you mentioned have been in Philly. We won a World Series, so we come over there and we pass our knowledge on to Rhino, and he did the same thing when he was, you know, when he once established himself as one of the best to ever put the uniform on. He did the same thing in that Cub clubhouse. And like I said, I'm glad the statue was put up. I'm glad he was able to see that. I'm glad he was in the Hall of Fame and able to live that. I just wish we had him here a few more years, because he's going to be missed not only by Chicago fans, but everybody.
Amen to that. And I'm glad that you were also at the statue unveiling. It made it great. The packed house, the whole thing. It was a great vibe out there. And I'm glad too that you mentioned, people forget, man, Sandberg goes down as one of the greatest second basemen of all time, but he was a pretty good third baseman too in his rookie year. Like, I don't remember him having many problems over there either.
You could put him anywhere.
Yeah.
I guarantee. I mean, if he was alive, he'd say, no, well, you put him behind the plate, he'd probably do a good job catching. This guy was just a super athlete. Any kind of ball you put in his hand, you put a bowling ball, put a tennis ball, put a golf ball, basketball, whatever sport it was, he excelled. He was an unbelievable golfer. He was an unbelievable quarterback in high school. I guess he got recruited by a ton of colleges.
Oh, yeah. He was offered to play quarterback, I think, at Washington State. Pretty sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. He's left so many good things on the table by leaving us early, but he set the example of how to play the game the right way. And if you're a Chicago Cub baseball player and you're just coming into the organization, I advise every one of you to find as much video as you can, listen to interviews from him, read books that he wrote, what kind of individual he was, because he was something very, very special.
Last thing from me, Larry, is I do have I've got a trivia question for you. I want to see if you can. I ask this trivia question probably about once a year when we talk about the Sandberg game. The Sandberg game. We all know the Sandberg game. Who had the game-winning hit in the Sandberg game? Do you remember? Larry Boa.
No, I thought it might have been Sam.
I know, everybody. that's the answer I get 96% of the time. The answer is Dave Owen. Dave Owen ended up, out of all of that, two home runs in the ninth and tenth innings, was it?
Did I get that right? Wow. Yeah. Game-tying home runs.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And then little Davey Owens with the game-winning hit.
That's a great trivia question.
You can use that.
You're right about that. You're right about that. You know, usually people say, hey, you remember that game between the Cubs and the Cardinals? And I say, oh, yeah, but they don't do that anymore. You remember that game, the Sandberg game? That's what it was called.
Yes.
And, you know, from that day on, well, he was established before that, I think. But that really put a stamp on how great this guy was. National TV, doing what he did against one of the all-time closers of baseball in Bruce Sutter. If you'd have gone in the clubhouse after the game, you would have thought, yeah, I got a home run. No big deal. We won. That was a bigger deal.
That's Larry Boa joining us to remember Rhino here on 670 The Score, as we have all day long. Larry, thank you for your time. Condolences on losing your close friend and Ryan Sandberg. And we can't thank you enough for coming on here and being part of celebrating his life today here on The Score and on the Raheem Ian Harris.
Thanks so much, Larry.
I appreciate it, and I love this guy to death. He's a great player, but more important, he was a great person.
Thank you so much, Larry.
Amen. Thanks, Larry.
That has been a sentiment that has been shared by so many people today,
and
it is so accurate.
He joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com.
Why are more women than ever choosing Natural Cycles, the hormone-free, side-effect-free way to take control of your fertility? Natural Cycles is a birth control app that uses your temperature to find your fertile window. It is more than a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
Bob Costas and Tony Kubek back at Wrigley Field in Chicago.
Changed my whole career in one game. Took my expectations as a player to a whole nother level.
Sooner is coming in to try and protect the one-run lead.
Tito Landrum playing Sandberg very deep in left field.
Saturday game of the week. Everybody watching.
In a left center field and deep. This is a tie ball game.
Whitey Herzog has watched leads of 7-1 and 9-3 evaporate.
Sandberg with a 4-for-5 day. Two hitters have been outstanding for the Cubs today.
This has just been a great ball game.
The Cardinals come up with two, and Willie McGee was the key man of the inning. They take an 11-9 lead to the bottom of the 10th. Is it safe today? Don't bet on it. Coming up after the baseball, Eusebio Pedroza versus Gerald Hayes from Panama. I hope it's half as exciting as this ball game has been, unless something should change drastically here in the last of the 10th. This week's NBC Light Beer for Miller player of the game is Willie McGee.
Here comes the man again. What a day he's
in. Oh! He gets deep left center. Look out. Do you believe it? It's gone.
Oh.
There may be a new player of the game. Ryan Sandberg, five hits, including two home runs. We will go to the 11th. Tied at 11. Sandberg, in the Cubs' last at-bat, has twice delivered a game-tying home run, a solo shot of the night. A two-run blast with Tony, not only can I not remember the last time I broadcast a game this good, I can't remember the last time I've seen a game this enjoyable, this entertaining.
Well, you get those kinds here in Fenway Park, don't you, or Detroit's Tiger Stadium?
I don't think I'd be a Hall of Famer or have a statue if it wasn't for the catapult of that one game.
Dave Owen delivers the game-winning hit. Ryan Sandberg and Willie McGee will share our light beer for Miller player of the game. Can't remember the last time I saw a better one.
By the way, you're welcome, Bob, for those highlights the Cub fans watch every year, and they've heard so many times.
And in fact, MLB Network is going to run the Sandberg game in its entirety this weekend. So for people who didn't get a chance to enjoy it or want to enjoy it again, it will be available for them. Bob Costas is Bob Costas.
He really is.
And he joins us now on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. We don't have time to even go through Bob's resume.
I don't know what we need to.
Please don't.
No, we're not going to. We're just really thankful that you had the time and the inclination to join us here in Chicago on the Spiegel and Holmes show to talk about Rhino. I find, Bob, as I get older, that I have to lend a lot of context to younger people in things that have happened. And it's interesting. And I enjoy it when younger people ask me about stuff. How would you describe to people who weren't living and weren't baseball fans during that time what that game meant to baseball, to you and your career, and to Ryan Sandberg?
Well, that would be a remarkable game if it happened tomorrow. Just remarkable for the sheer facts of the game. But it's the context that elevates it and makes it still resonate more than 40 years later, to the point where I think there have been three separate documentaries about it. And it's the signature game of a Hall of Fame career. It also marked the Cubs in 1984 as no longer the woebegone, lovable losers, inhabitants of Wrigley Field, but a real contender. And in fact, they came within a game of going to the World Series. But the context is that it's the mid-1980s, and the media landscape has not exploded. Relatively few games were on TV. Chicago was an exception, because almost every game was on WGN. And the superstation had just taken hold, not just out of Chicago, but in Atlanta, WTBS. So there were Braves fans all around the country and Cubs fans all around the country. But for most fans, the majority of their home team's games were on radio only. And if you lived in a non-big league city, I keep using Montana as an example, you know, pick wherever you want. If you lived in Montana, the only game you saw all week long was that Saturday afternoon game of the week, which sometimes, the Sandberg game included, got ratings higher than hit primetime shows get today, or that some postseason baseball games get today. This was your one chance to see Fernando Valenzuela face Johnny Bench. Or if you lived in a National League town, your one chance to see Carl Yastrzemski or Al Kaline or Mickey Mantle. Or the reverse, if you lived in an American League town, maybe your one chance outside of the All-Star game to see Willie Mays or Roberto Clemente or Hank Aaron. I'm going back to the 60s and 70s there. But the same thing applies because the game of the week was an institution on NBC with Kurt Gowdy, with Joe Garagiola, with Tony Kubek, with the great Vin Scully. And then I was thrown in kind of as an afterthought. And I just was lucky enough early in my career to be doing the backup game. And the backup game became the lead game that day, June 23rd, 1984. And Sandberg had the game of a lifetime. Now, have I seen a few games since then, including in the postseason? And it's elevated if it's in the World Series or a big postseason game. Have I seen a handful of regular season games that just on the facts of the game rank with that? Yeah. I mean, Nick Kurtz from the A's, I've got his name right, Nick Kurtz, the big Amish from Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Yes,
okay.
Sir.
He went 6-for-6 with 4 home runs and a double, and the double almost cleared the fence. Now, objectively, now he was playing in Houston, not at home. It's not Wrigley Field. Objectively, that's a better game. But will it resonate the same? No, because Nick Kurtz is yet to prove that he'll be a Hall of Fame player. Plenty impressive, but it was, as I said, the signature game of a Hall of Fame career. It was the big game in an epic season as the Cubs come out of nowhere and very nearly get to the World Series. And it was at Wrigley Field in the game of the week, when the game of the week meant something drastically different than any regular season game means today.
If you're listening, you know that's Bob Costas here on the Spiegel and Holmes Show on 670 The Score. It's kind of, I wonder if people can wrap their heads around the woebegone Cubs, as I believe you called them. They hadn't been to the postseason since 1945 at that point.
Yeah.
Hadn't won anything. They didn't have an MVP since Ernie Banks went back to back in 58 and 59 at that point. So, you know, nationally, for you guys in conversation, I wonder if the Cubs were sort of a sleeping giant in that here's a big market. Maybe this is useful for us on the national level if they're any good. And then, oh, my God, look at that. They're actually kind of good. I wonder if it had any of that to it.
I was never in any of those conversations with executives and producers. I went where they sent me and I prepared and I was delighted to be part of the NBC Game of the Week. But you liked it even more when it was at Fenway or when it was at Wrigley because of the atmosphere involved. And remember, the Cubs got to the postseason that year by winning the division. There was no wild card. There were then 24 teams, 4 divisions of 6 teams each, and only 4 teams, the division winners, went to the postseason. So the Cubs went directly to the league championship series, which then was best of 5 rather than best of 7 against the Padres, won the first 2 games convincingly at Wrigley Field. Now the whole nation has Cubs fever, and nothing against the Padres. Steve Garvey had a heroic game 4, hit a game-winning homer off Lee Smith. But I think most of the nation outside San Diego was crestfallen that the Padres won the next 3 games in San Diego, and they went to the World Series against the Tigers. I was savoring the possibility, again, nothing against the Padres. I was savoring the possibility of a World Series, and the World Series was on NBC that year, and I was the pregame and postgame host, and Vin Scully and Joe Garagiola called it. But I was thinking, how epic would a World Series be at Tiger Stadium and Wrigley Field? And those hopes were dashed.
Bob, all of us that go into this are in some ways storytellers, and we love telling the stories of the games that we cover. And usually we don't really want to be a part of that story. We just kind of want to tell the story.
Yeah.
What's it mean to you that when Rhino talks about, when he talked about that game, that you are part of his story, his Hall of Fame story. And he's been very adamant about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think part of it may have been the way Tony and I covered it. But the biggest part was that it was just on the NBC Game of the Week, not to belabor the point. The players used to call it the Game of the World. If they saw Vin and Joe or me and Tony at the batting cage on Friday, oh, we must be the Game of the World tomorrow, meaning that much of the baseball world, including many of their peers, because there were night games and people would be watching the Saturday afternoon game, ball players would be watching it. So it meant something to the players to be on that game. Now almost every game is on TV somewhere. It's meaningful, but not as meaningful. So I think that accounts for a lot of how Ryan feels, but it was very, very flattering and meaningful to me that every time we crossed paths, he would express his appreciation for the small part in my mind that I played in the signature game of his career, which is why he asked me to introduce him on June 23rd, 2024, the 40th anniversary of the Sandberg game, which was when the Cubs appropriately unveiled his statue outside Wrigley Field.
What was that day like for you, Bob? It was a beautiful ceremony.
It was a beautiful ceremony. True to Ryan Sandberg, two of the people he asked to speak were Larry Boa and Sean Dunstan, his primary double play partners at shortstop over the years with the Cubs. And I heard Sean Dunstan talking with Mark DeRosa and Robert Flores and Lauren Shahadi today on the Major League Baseball Network. And Sean Dunstan broke down. He actually told them beforehand, I only want to do this on the phone. I don't want to be on camera. I don't want to do a Zoom because I think I'll be too emotional. And that was an accurate self-assessment. He talked about Ryan getting on the phone sometime very recently, knowing that his days were numbered, and talking to Sean Dunstan and Andre Dawson and telling them that he loved them, and they answering in kind, we love you too.
We have seen that video from MLB Network and played that earlier on the Score.
Oh, yeah, realized. Yeah.
It was beautiful. Last hour, Bob, we had Andre Dawson on this show, had a chance to talk to Andre, and he struggled to get through the first few moments of the interview.
Yeah.
And spoke about, you know, talking to Ryan, who was positive and strong. And then Ryan's daughter hopped on the phone and said, look, he's got maybe a week, just so you know.
Yeah.
But that wasn't him. But it's interesting because we also played some tape from Doug Glanville, who said that Ryan's quiet demeanor showed him a path of how he could be. And there's three. Mm-hmm. There's three right there. Andre Dawson, Ryan Sandberg, Doug Glanville. There have obviously been many others since. But
yeah.
that's one way of being dignified and quiet if it's true to yourself and being a great ball player. Ryan Sandberg is an example of that possible way to live it. Isn't he sort of yeah. DiMaggio-esque, perhaps, as I think about it?
No question. Although Joe DiMaggio, who I was lucky enough to know and I had a good relationship with him, you know, there were some peaks and valleys in Joe's life and maybe some a brooding aspect to his character. I say that with respect. And we all, Ryan included, you know, have moments in our lives that aren't perfect or aren't happy. But I think that Ryan's path was straighter than that of most, that most of his life typified who he was as a player and as a person. He was an elegant player. He was a nearly flawless player. Was he as spectacularly great as the greatest players in the Hall of Fame? No, he didn't hit 500 home runs. He didn't break any records other than, I guess, maybe some records at the time for consecutive errorless games at second base. He didn't get to the Hall of Fame by being every year the best player in the league. He got there by being one of the best players in the league for a very long time, for being consistently excellent in every aspect of the game. To me, it's an amazing stat or an interesting stat that the year he was MVP in 1984, he hit 19 home runs, two of them that day at Wrigley Field. But he also led the league with 19 triples, and he hit a lot of doubles, and he stole bases, and he played a nearly flawless second base. He won gold gloves by playing errorless ball, more so than by making highlight reel plays, although he made some of them. And the way he carried himself even then was distinctive. And when you contrast it, I don't want to sound like get off my lawn, but when you contrast it to the way some people now will celebrate a bloop single, this guy during the Sandberg game, was one of the epic games of all time. He put his head down and ran around the bases. Was he exhilarated? Yeah, you could see the smile on his face when he greeted his teammates in the dugout or they greeted him. But he was true to himself always. And in his Hall of Fame speech, the key word was respect. That was the theme. Respect the game. Respect your craft. And I think he embodied that almost every day of his baseball life. And when you mentioned, Matt, the ceremony when they unveiled the statue, Craig Counsell led all of the players in uniform out onto the balcony overlooking Gallagher. Now, the speaker's podium had you facing out toward the crowd gathered on the lawn, so that was behind you. But my wife, Jill, was in the front row, and she made eye contact with me and pointed, like, look up there. So I turned around and looked up there, and to me, that moment, with the players not saying anything, just quietly gathered out there to watch, exemplified two things. The generational connections that baseball exemplifies more than any other sport. The history, the nostalgia, it's just bigger in baseball than in other sports. But even more important in that moment is the idea of respect. Ryne Sandberg respected the game. He respected his teammates and his opponents. And as a result, that respect was reciprocated throughout his life and throughout his career, and especially in that moment.
Bob, we had Craig Counsell on this show earlier in the day, too. I don't mean to name drop. It's been a packed show. But anyway, Craig said he called that his favorite day as a Cub. That day.
There you go.
Exactly what you're talking about.
You know, Craig grew up around the game. He has great respect for the game. Played second base some during his career as well. You know, he would get it. You wouldn't have to explain it to him.
Bob, I've been thinking a lot over the last like 20 hours or so about the connection that we all have with baseball. But historically, when something like this happens, like, and I know that I'm being a prisoner of the moment. I'm a citizen of the city of Chicago, and Chicago is mourning right now with the loss of Rhino. But I keep thinking about the history of the Cubs. And therefore the history of the National League, and therefore the history of baseball writ large, and how even in a moment where sports is so fragmented and baseball is trying to find a justification for itself in many ways, that there's something about this that does feel big. And it's, I'm glad that it's big, that nationally people are like, this is tragic to lose Rhino. And I love that there is this kind of connection to history that is being shared and enjoyed in a way that we don't do enough when it comes to baseball at this point in the timeline.
Yeah, the Cubs are, always have been and remain, one of the flagship franchises in baseball because of the team's history, because of Wrigley Field. You know, it makes a difference. You can say that this team has such and such a history, but many of them have been in two or three ballparks. All the history of the Red Sox resides at Fenway, and almost all the history of the Cubs resides at Wrigley Field. So it just resonates more. The entire nation was captivated by the Cubs in 2016. And that Game 7 against Cleveland, which now is the team that has waited the longest since 1948, without winning a world championship. And had they not been facing the Cubs, they would have been the sentimental favorites. But that Game 7 is the highest rated game up until now. There hasn't been a game since postseason or obviously regular season that approached that rating. Any Game 7 in a World Series is going to get eyeballs. But it was the story of the Cubs, really, that captivated the nation.
Bob, you're the best. Thank you for answering the call. I love this idea of you and Sandberg inextricably linked forever, and your career since is it's gone pretty well. I gotta say, we'll go over the resume next time if you'll allow.
Spare the audience and spare me, but I appreciate the thought, Matt.
Thank you, Bob.
Thanks, Bob.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks, Lawrence.
Fun fact, you can't get pregnant every day. You're only fertile for 6 days, ovulation day and the 5 days leading up to it. Natural Cycles is the only birth control app that can pinpoint your fertile window by analyzing your hormone-driven temperature trends. It's more than just a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
Here's Sandberg. There's a drive way back. It might be it's new though. It's number 40, and his 100th run batted in this year. Rhino hits his 40th home run.
It's Harry Carey on the call on WGN television, as he did many calls of Ryan Sandberg's home runs throughout his years with the Chicago Cubs, turning into a power hitter midway through his career. And we remember Rhino today after he passed yesterday, sadly, at the age of 65 after a long battle with prostate cancer. It is Rahimi and Harris, Rami Makhlouf in for Layla Rahimi this midday, and Marshall Harris alongside, obviously, as he is Monday through Friday on this fine program. Coming up at 1 o'clock, Mark Grody will be in for the entire 1 o'clock hour. I know he has remembrances of Rhino being around the Cubs for many years as a reporter and then part of the Cubs radio network there during the World Series one, which Rhino was around for as well and enjoyed as much as anybody. But between now and then, and we're going to hear from Larry Boa at 1:45, we want to hear from you guys at 312-644-6767. We'll get to some of your calls and some of your texts in just a moment. But wanted to take a trip down memory lane and go back and take a listen to Rhino as he received what he said was the second greatest honor of his life, next to marrying his wife Margaret, being inducted into the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame. Here's Ryan Sandberg.
What a beautiful day this is. I stand here today before you humbled and a grateful baseball player. And as I look behind me here at the greatest players in the history of the game, I am in awe.
I was in awe every time I walked onto the field. That's respect. I was taught you never ever disrespect your opponent or your teammates or your organization or your manager and never ever your uniform. Make a great play, act like you've done it before, get a big hit, look for the third base coach and get ready to run the bases. Hit a home run, put your head down, drop the bat, run around the bases. Because the name on the front is more, a lot more important than the name on the back. That's respect.
I know that if I had ever allowed myself to think this was possible, if I had ever taken one day in pro ball for granted, I'm sure I would not be here today. I don't have the words to describe Cub fans. Who welcomed me as a rookie, were patient through my 1-for-32 start, and took me into their homes and into their hearts, and treated me like a member of their family. You picked me up when I was down. You lifted me to heights that I didn't know I could reach. You expected a certain level of play from me, and you made me play at that level for a long time. You were probably wondering what was the first when I said this honor is the second best thing that's ever happened to me. My wife, Margaret, is the best thing that's ever happened to me. She is my best friend. She is the love of my life. She is my salvation. She's my past, my present, my future. She is my sun, my moon, my stars. She is everything that's good about life, and I thank her for entering my life at a time when I needed her most. I love you. The game fit me because it was right. It was all about doing things right. If you played the game the right way, played the game for the team, good things would happen. That's what I loved most about the game. How a ground out to second with a man on second and nobody out was a great thing. The reason I am here, they tell me, is that I played the game a certain way. That I played the game the way it was supposed to be played. I don't know about that, but I do know this. I had too much respect for the game to play it any other way. And if there is a single reason I am here today, it is because of one word, respect.
There's Ryan Sandberg being inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame for the umpteenth time in today's show. I got choked up listening to that, Marshall. That's just a guy who gets it right there. That's just a dude who gets it on every level.
And I think what endears him to baseball fans even more than just his play is that attitude personified. Those weren't just words at his Hall of Fame speech, but there's clear evidence by what he did in his 16-year career that this is indeed who he is, who he was, and who he was going to continue to be for the rest of his days. And for Ryan Sandberg, that level of authenticity, and I think people appreciate that, whether you do play the game like Ryan Sandberg or you play it your own way. But either way, as long as you're authentic, people will be drawn to you.
Mm-hmm.
And so it wasn't just his greatness on the field, but his greatness in everything he did because he was truly being himself.
And we played a clip of Craig Counsell earlier saying, you know, I think he was operating at a higher level than the rest of us. I don't know about you, Marshall. I come across guys sometimes and gals who like, I'm like, oh, they got this life thing down. You know what I mean? Not just baseball. They know how to love, how to learn, how to teach. They understand their place in the world. They understand the impact that they can have. There are just some people, when I say that's a dude who gets it, I'm not just talking about baseball. I'm not just talking about his relationship with Cubs fans. To echo what Craig Counsell said, this is a guy who just was operating at a higher level in terms of his approach to life and his appreciation and understanding of life and how precious it is and how precious all the relationships and all the achievements and every day that we have here, how great that is. And you can just, I don't know, maybe it's just a moment, but you can hear what Craig Counsell is talking about right there in that Hall of Fame induction speech.
I think it comes down to basic principles of whether it's a philosophy, whether it's setting your boundaries, whether it's understanding exactly who you want to be and then going out and living that
yes.
way. That's what he did on the field. And I think what a lot of people found out as they interacted with and met Ryan Sandberg, whether that was as a fan during his playing days, a fan after his playing days, him and his long journey to becoming a major league manager with the Phillies, he stayed principled and he kind of just kept doing what he does. It was a steadfast approach. And that's what people can appreciate because it's hard to do.
Yeah.
It's hard to do not only when we talk about professional sports, but also in life.
Marriage. He talked about his relationship with his wife and how much I just got married 5 weeks ago. You know what I mean? I hope I can reach that level when it comes to marriage someday in life.
And as we talk about Ryan Sandberg here on Rahimi and Harris with Rami Makhlouf filling in for Layla Rahimi and his life and his legacy, you can't separate his on the field from his off the field because the approach, it didn't change
across the board.
And people love authenticity and they love something that is above what most people do.
Yeah.
And most people can't do what Ryan Sandberg was able to do on a baseball field or off a baseball field.
Remembering Ryan Sandberg today with you at 312-644-6767. It continues
After the Rahimi and Harris show, Nico Horner makes his weekly appearance with Spiegel and Holmes at 2:30, followed by Craig Counsell at 3, Barry Rosner at 4, and Bob Costas at 5. Larry Boa will be here on this program at 1:45, part of the 1 o'clock hour with Mark Grody. Let's get out to your calls, though. 312-644-6767. Let's go out to the phones, and we're going to go to Rich in Elk Grove. You're on the Score. What's up, Rich?
Hey, it's just hard to believe that he's gone.
It is.
I grew up watching him. Both sides of my family were Cubs fans, so I grew up watching them. Then I started to play baseball, and then I would just watch everything that he did. I tried to do what he did, and then I remember one time I was it was a summer league, I don't know, it was like 12 or 13 or something, and I was playing second base, and I made a nice play. It was a hard hit ground ball, and I caught backhanded and did the sidearm, and both teams are turning, yeah, good job Rhino, good job Rhino. And then I started getting into collecting just Ryan Sandberg stuff. That's what I did. I collected posters, the baseball schedules. I have like 20 of those, baseball cards, just a ton of stuff. Then I started to get into autographs. And then we lived in Arizona, so I would go to the spring training. So after he was done with the minor leaguers, he would sign autographs and stuff like that. And then we moved back here, and I would go to the I would try to find autograph shows where he was at. So I have baseballs. I have a Budweiser poster from '84. It says I had him sign at the Sandberg game. So I'm sad he's gone.
Appreciate the call, Rich. We all are. Like I said earlier, Marshall. It's kind of hard to believe.
Surreal.
Yeah. You don't think about your heroes and legends and people that you put on this pedestal or on this level. We don't think about them just as human beings sometimes, and we all face our mortality at some point. Too early for Rhino, and I think that's what especially makes it hard to believe.
I remember texting him when, you know, the news came out last year. Right here in this very studio, that he was cancer free, and just, you know, congratulations. And he responded, and I was just like, this is good. This is a good day for Ryan Sandberg, but also a great day for Chicago as well. And the fact that we've gone to where we were, I remember talking to him opening day of last season when he threw out the first pitch, and he was in high spirits. And it's just so sad how quickly it all came apart for him in the second round of dealing with the cancer that it returned.
It's a nasty disease, man. That's a big part of the reason why we are doing what we're doing with the Cubs Radiothon. The Cubs for a Cure Stand Up to Cancer for the 24-hour Cubs for a Cure Radiothon starts at 10 a.m. this Thursday, July 31st, right here on The Score. Danny Parkins hosts the Radiothon, which will feature inspiring stories and many donation incentives. 100% of the proceeds will benefit Brain Up for Cancer Research. Let's go back out to the phones, and in Morton Grove is Beth. You're on The Score. What's up, Beth?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Hope everybody's doing well. I'm a little older than Ryan Sandberg, so I watched his whole career at Wrigley Field from the bleachers way back in the day. The one time I got to meet him was maybe about 6 or 8 years ago through Restore. My husband was looking into it, and we went to a introductory meeting about it, and a lot of people were there because they had advertised Ryan was going to be there. We were there anyway, but he was, like everybody else has said, the kindest, most gracious person. When my husband took our picture, Ryan said, how about with you, sir? And my husband's very shy and quiet, and he said, no, thank you. So another caller who said that about getting his other cards and stuff, I can totally believe that and see that he would do that. And just one last thing, my greatest, another thing I listened through was the greatest historic moment I've ever been at. Well, I'm old enough to have been at the old stadium when Bobby Hull, not the first time, but the second time he made his 50th goal. I was at that game. The good thing was that I missed the goal itself because apparently the man in front of us threw up all over the people in front of him.
Oh.
I was buying popcorn for my dad. I was 8 years old. He sent me to get popcorn. But I got to see him skating around the ice. So I'm kind of not sorry I didn't see the goal, but I was there at the game. So thank you very much for taking my call. Rest in peace, Rhino. So many friends who named their dogs after him. I've been crying since I heard about it. Sorry, I don't want to cry on the radio. My husband will kill me if I cry on the radio. So thank you very much for listening to me and for taking my call.
We appreciate you sharing your thoughts with us. And I am also glad that you missed the goal, if that was the reason that you missed Bobby Hull's 50th goal.
Yeah.
That's a good reason to miss it. And your sentiment has been shared. And the Rhino dog story is a thing. Like,
oh, yeah.
So many people name their pet Rhino.
Rhino or Sandberg. Yeah, absolutely.
And I just, man, the man had an impact.
Huge impact, and not in a personal way. You know what I mean? You won't get this every time you have a superstar athlete or celebrity of any kind to have the personal stories of, hey, this guy took time out of his day to make sure that moment was a good one and a memorable one for me. That's the sentiment that I'm going to take away from this. More than anything, Marshall, is all the people talking about the personal interactions that they've had with Rhino and the effort that he put into those personal interactions. That's a rare thing for somebody of his stature.
We've already heard from one of Rhino's teammates, as we had Gary Matthews on the program earlier. We're going to hear more from another teammate, one who played such an influential part in his career as a Cub.
Sean Dunston. We'll hear from him coming up right after this. And Grody joins us for the entire 1 o'clock hour, including a visit from Larry Boa at 1:45. All that still to come on Rahimi and Harris. Rami Makhlouf in for Rahimi today. And back right after this on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
By the way, while we were watching that, one of his teammates texted me, and he let me know that Ryan passed away at 5:23.
Oh, wow.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Always a delight to talk to our friend Bruce Levine. He joins us now on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, aturo.com. Bruce, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. A tough day. Very tough day for everybody who loves the game of baseball, loved Ryan Sandberg and his family. Just a difficult day, but... You know, hopefully one that eventually we just look back and remember all the wonderful times that he gave us.
You know, he was, we've talked about it, and people say stuff like this when someone passes, but that guy was just a prince of a man. He was a really good person, flat out great guy. And, you know, it kind of makes it even worse when someone of his quality passes. It just hurts, and I know that, you know, there aren't words to kind of express that, but he was just a wonderful, wonderful guy.
Well, you know, words, luckily we have words, but we also have the great memories of him performing so magnificently for the Chicago Cubs for so many years, and just the great story of him being acquired by Dallas Green and bringing him over as the extra guy in the trade with Larry Boa for Ivan DeJesus back in the winter of 1981, and then of course you know the wonderful career and just all the things that he meant. Eventually you know, living in Arizona and then wanting to move back and live in Chicago about 10 years ago with Margaret, just a lot of great memories. That's all I can tell you.
Bruce, you did a tremendous job on Marquee last night, putting into words what people were feeling and eulogizing a legend in Ryne Sandberg, somebody who you knew well. You were there, as you pointed out, for his first major league hit when he was wearing number 37 in a Phillies uniform back in 82, and you were there for his last hit as well. So you covered his entire career in totality. How would you describe the way that he became more comfortable in the spotlight, from a shy kid from Spokane to a Chicago superstar, and the evolution of Ryne Sandberg, the celebrity?
Margaret Sandberg, his second wife. Margaret was the love of his life and helped transform him into somebody that believed in himself and could express himself and feel good about himself when he was in public. He was always a reticent personality as a player. One of his nicknames, you know, the natural and all those things were one, but among his teammates, he was known as Gabby. Because he didn't talk. Hopefully you'll talk to Rick Sutcliffe today, and he'll be on the station. And he'll talk about them driving in from Glenview every day and Sut doing all the talking for both him and Rhino. He would do both ends, you know, it was like a ventriloquist to do the conversation. You know, Rhino would be engaged. He'd look at him, he'd smile, he would shake his head, but he just wasn't an expressive guy. 30 years ago, when Ryan and Margaret got married, it was a transformation in him as a person. He always told me that she taught him so much about life and love, and it was just a beautiful relationship that brought out the very best in Ryne Sandberg.
You know, obviously, Dallas Green had spent a lot of time in Philadelphia, and there was always the story out there that he didn't want to make any trade that didn't include Ryne Sandberg, that he saw something in him when he was a young lad and that he wanted to bring him to Chicago. How is that just sort of a
urban legend?
Yeah. Or is that real?
No, it was real. They Dallas was an important person in the Philadelphia front office for a long time before he came to Chicago and took the job as general manager. And talk about transformation of a franchise. That's what he did. And he made these great trades that brought in Sandberg and Boa and yep. the Denier and Matthews. You know, it just transformed the whole idea. And then, of course, Gordy Goldsberry came with him from there, and he was the great scouting director that eventually you saw the people like Greg Maddux and Jamie Moyer and, Grace and Rafael Palmeiro come out of that. So he was a truly important figure. But Sandberg was someone that he wanted in this deal, and he knew that Philadelphia wanted to finish off their team by trading Boa, who was aging at that time, for DeJesus. It worked out for them as well. They won, the pennant in 83 after that deal. But the reality is that Sandberg was, you know, basically unknown besides the people in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. You know, they mm-hmm. knew he was a good young player, shortstop, second baseman. They even thought he was possibly a center fielder. Mm-hmm. They didn't know where he played him. And people forget that he played third base the first year and was sensational there for the Cubs, even though he started his career 1-for-32.
Hall of Famers get enshrined, Bruce, because of what they accomplish in their production, but also because of the way they change maybe the position, or they have an impact on the game and the way that people look for their guys who play the same role. Likewise, Ryne Sandberg at second base was not your prototypical second baseman in 1984. How would you describe the way that he changed the position?
You know, you can't, because you wouldn't teach the way that he went after ground balls, okay? He was a guy that instead of taking the ball in when on a ground ball, you know, receiving it and then bringing it toward you, he pushed his hands out, okay? So it was an unconventional way that he did it. He did it so well, and he did it so many times in practice that it became a natural thing for him, and he became the best at it. I mean, he had two extraordinarily long errorless streaks in his career, one of them in the 90s, or I think one in the 100s, 120s, something or other, and the other in the 70s or 80s. So the guy was just impeccable. I think the one thing that we always pointed out was after a collision in 1983 with Keith Moreland, anytime a ball went up in the air, he'd yell to Sean Dunston, "It's yours, it's yours." Because that was one thing he didn't ever want to do again. I mean, Moreland destroyed him in a collision. And you know, these baseball collisions change guys' lives and ideas about, you know, how to go about certain things that frighten them. And he was Moreland just destroyed him in a pop-up. So that's the one thing he hesitated to do. Everything else was just unbelievable. And the practice habits, the way that he went about his job, just the teammate. He was a terrific teammate. You know, you can say, you know, Ryne Sandberg was the perfect warrior when it came to Major League Baseball. He just did everything right. He was a mechanical man, but in the truest sense of being a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, you know, it's just extraordinary. There's so many, like, different stories you read. And apparently he wanted number 14. He'd been number 14, and then, you know, that's Ernie Banks. So he ends up as 23 2 years before Jordan comes to Chicago. Just kind of, you know, just so many little moments like that you don't know about that you'll learn about after the fact.
So the one thing that people didn't really know much about is that he was a prankster, and he pulled an awful lot of tricks. He was, you know, the master of pyro destroying of people's newspapers and shoelaces. He was, you know, back then, you know, that was just part of, you know, the pranking, and he was a master at it. You know, just, you know, I remember Gary Matthews talking about him being in the bathroom in the stall reading a newspaper, and all of a sudden it goes up in flames, right? it's just, you know, all great stories like that where he showed his sense of humor, he showed his fun with guys, rookies, you know, always had different stories to tell about how Rhino, remember it was, I think it was Doug DiCenzo told me about the time that he was a rookie. They went to Montreal. They were taking a train from the hotel to the ballpark in Montreal. Rhino, and he, you know, DiCenzo had never been there before. Rhino and him get off. He gets down to tie his shoe, and as soon as the train doors open, Rhino jumps back into the train and leaves DiCenzo at a stand, at one of the stations, not knowing where he's at or how to get back to. So, you know, some terrific stories. I mean, he had a good time with his teammates. But, you know, the thing that I'll always remember is the second half after his career and just, you know, being the engaging guy that he was, trying radio, being on television, you know, doing a lot of different things to show that he had a lot to say to go along with the idea that he was a Hall of Fame player.
And which wasn't always the case. You told a story that I thought was fascinating about the first time that you wanted to talk to him about 90 minutes before a game, and he basically blew you off and said, "Hey, I'm too intense. If you want to do this, come by the park at 9:30 in the morning when I'm taking ground balls."
Right, David. Yeah, he said, but I mean, he said it first. He blew me off. He said, "No, I don't have time." Then after the game, he took me aside and he said, "Look, I do everything I can to be ready every day. I'm pretty nervous about being prepared every day. So if you want to talk to me anytime way before I take ground balls in the morning, I'll talk to you for any amount of time you want. But I don't want to do it in my practice sessions before games because my intent is just to get better and work hard at it." So even then, not being very expressive, he expressed kindness and understanding in the situation.
Yeah, you know, have you ever seen a better ball player, Bruce? I mean, there are great players. The thing that was so incredible about him was he was such a natural athlete, and he was such a kind of elegant, for lack of a better word, player, the way he played the game, and obviously he could do anything on the ball field. But I'm just wondering, did he remind you of anyone you had known before, or was he very much a unique individual, especially as a second baseman?
So in his second year, Jim Frey became the manager of the Cubs, and he had been a hitting instructor in between his time of being the manager at Kansas City. He went to the Mets, and he worked with Daryl Strawberry. And Daryl Strawberry was having a hard time, and he helped bring out the swing in Daryl Strawberry while he was there. In 84, when he saw Sandberg taking batting practice and hitting everything to right field, he said, you know, you're a big, strong guy. I mean, you should be able to pick balls and start thinking about pulling baseballs. And in 84, you saw the beginning, the evolution of Ryan Sandberg's career from the advice that Frey gave him and started to use left field and pull the ball. He became, you know, the all-time leader at the time when he retired for hitting home runs as a second baseman. He had, people forget, you know, stealing 50 bases and over 300 in his career. So, Mike, you're right. I mean, he was a complete ball player that got every ounce out of his ability, and he was an elegant player to watch on defense because he basically invented that play where you go over the bag, you're running to your right, and you go over the bag on a play that a shortstop makes, and then turning quickly and bouncing the ball to the first base.
Right. Bruce,
he made that happen.
In 30 seconds, why didn't the Cubs ever hire him to be manager?
Well, I don't think that, you know, at the time, Jim Hendry told him, hey, look, you have to work your way up. We don't know if you can handle people or not. Again, his quiet image, you know, worked against him. And to Jim's credit and the organization's credit, he went to Peoria, Class A, and no other Hall of Famer, I think, other than Gary Carter in history, went to the minor leagues to work his trade and work his way up. And to his credit, you know, he eventually became the manager of the Phillies. But again, I don't think the Cubs thought he was managerial material when he started out. Again, he proved people wrong.
Great stuff, Bruce. Really appreciate it.
Terrific job, Bruce.
Yeah, terrific.
Right. Really.
Take care, guys.
Well done.
That is our guy, Bruce Levine.